And we did it to ourselves.
We did.
Seriously.
Mostly my fault. And I
and it could
it.
Be like
it's
a 200th
episode.
It's the 200th episode, Gwynnies.
It is.
It's a big deal.
Right on the 200th
really
episode.
It.
And we gave it to one of the sickest men in the whole freaking planet.
Disgusting pieces of low down shit.
I don't know if he, I will let you know at the end of the series if I think he is worse than Otis Toole. I don't know which one.
Otis Toole might be worse.
Is
very possible.
Like, I am more, even though Otis Toole killed men, Henry Lee Lucas killed women. I still am more scared of Otis Toole.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to meet either of them in
no.
the house. Like,
no, never.
I would rather not meet either of them.
Straight up evil. Leave the dog alone because the dog didn't do a damn thing. And now you're trying to feed him your bodily
Thou
fluid.
Shall kill all of your
everybody's had a dog fish a tampon out of the garbage. It ain't right
to bubble you, but you can pretend like you will. A dog.
That was wow.
I don't want to. I had to eat a lot of
talking about the worst of the worst.
I don't want to do it.
Did he do it? Did he not do it?
I don't like him.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Straight Up Evil. My name is Jocelyn. I'm the brunette. We've got Katie. She's the redhead.
Chilu.
And we have Carly. She's the blonde.
Hiya.
Tonight, we are beginning with part one of a three-part series on Henry Lee Lucas, Gwynnies, aka the Drifter Killer, aka the Confession Killer.
Sorry, Gwynnies.
About the next month.
Sorry about the next month of your mental status.
Really bringing in the holiday season here for you, Gwynnies, with some
coming
truly
out season.
Coming in
out
hot.
Season.
Coming in hot
with the bleeding out season.
This episode marks our 200th of Straight Up Evil, Gwynnies.
Yay!
I'm proud of us, Lynn.
I just can't.
I'm so
like,
proud.
I know. It's great. So we're grateful for all the support. You know, we love doing the show. Thank you for being here with us. All right, Henry Lee Lucas. Okay, we chose him for some pretty key reasons. All right, we get requests from listeners all the time to cover serial killers. Probably the most common that we receive are like some type of serial killers. Probably the most requested, I think, is Ted Bundy.
I know,
but
we're
sorry.
Just avoiding. We're avoiding that one at all.
We just hate to break it to you, Gwynnies, but we all really hate Ted Bundy. It's just how it is.
Ted Bundy is not hot.
No.
Ted Bundy is not hot. That's never been hot.
No.
He just wanted to be famous so bad, and that's exactly what happened. And I know most of these offenders, like, that's what they want, but Ted is just on another level.
Yeah, Henry's like that too. Henry is like it too. He wanted the attention.
He did.
It's true. And Henry definitely wanted to be famous, right? But Henry.
But did he want to be famous though? Or did he just want attention from his mother?
Or anyone.
Like anyone.
Maybe
mommy
the first
issues?
Time anyone was ever nice to him was when he was confessing to hundreds
horrible,
of
murders. Heinous murders. Yeah.
Right.
We know Ted killed 18 women that we know of.
For sure.
Right.
And even though Henry said that he killed hundreds, literally hundreds of white women, that would make
him. We don't
him,
have proof of a lot of them.
No, we don't. And it would make him the most prolific serial killer that we know of.
And that's like real convenient.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So if Henry told the truth when he recanted and he actually never killed anyone, what the hell happened here? Who killed the 11 women Henry Lee Lucas is convicted and sentenced to death for killing? What sort of justice is there for these families? These are all important questions that we're going to try to answer over the course of this series. It is a rabbit hole, Gwynnies. There are a lot of twists and turns, a lot of different plot points, a lot we got to fit in here. But one of the final reason why we chose Henry Lee Lucas is because his supposed partner in crime, Otis Elwood Toole, was convicted of murdering Adam Walsh, son of John Walsh, who we love and admire on the show. We have had tons of requests to cover Adam Walsh as well. And we have also avoided it because it is one of the most heinous child murders in modern history.
Oh,
so episode three of the series case is pretty much entirely just the Adam Walsh case. You've been warned, Quinnies. Okay. It is absolutely brutal subject matter. Do you, Quinnies, have any other warnings before before we get started?
If you get uncomfortable about certain things, you probably, this episode is not for you. If you are easily discomforted by things, like unsettling circumstances, I suggest you just go play another episode of Straight Up Evil isn't this one.
I will say, like, this episode in particular is a very strong cocktail of grooming, sexual assault, murder, rape, necrophilia, mommy issues, kids, daddy issues, abuse,
kids, it's everything,
animals, everything. So we like always cover some or most of those things, but like this one has all of it in heavy, heavy details. So
Oh God, it gives me the feeling in the stomach.
We are going to start with Katie talking to us about the childhood of Henry Lee Lucas.
Here we go.
If Henry is to be believed, one of the most brutal.
Horrible. Henry Lee Lucas was born on August 23rd of 1936. He's a Virgo. He was born in a one-room log cabin in poverty. He grew up in straight poverty in Blacksburg, Virginia. As a child, like, people would describe Henry Lee Lucas, or HL, as I call him a lot, would describe him as a child that he would get a lot of attention because he would display frighteningly strange behaviors. His mother's name was Viola Dixon Lucas, and his father's name was Anderson No Legs Lucas, they called him.
Yeah.
That's all.
And the reason they called him that is because Anderson actually had an accident where he lost his leg in a workplace accident by a railroad.
I heard it wasn't a workplace accident at
all. I heard that too. I heard he got pissed drunk on moonshine and fell asleep on the train tracks.
Who knows? Sources do say different things. He basically makes a living by manufacturing alcohol illegally. Due to that, he, you know, is obviously a bad alcoholic. And he actually introduced HL to alcohol at a very young age. Now, his mother, Viola Lucas, she was extremely violent. Lucas was the youngest kid of nine of their children. They had nine children. And so a lot of the times her violence, like, she took it out on him a lot, and she took it out on the husband as well. She was abusive to the husband. She also suffered from alcoholism. She was a bad alcoholic. She was also a prostitute. It's rough. Okay. So when H. Lucas was 8 years old, he was actually beaten so badly by his mother in the head. She beat him with a wooden plank, and it was so bad that he actually spent 3 days in a coma.
Yeah, unconscious. That cannot be good.
Medical attention.
And she just left him. Yeah, she just left him like that in a bed and just left him.
But like, oh, he's playing dead. He's fine.
She also, because she was a prostitute, she would have men over at the house, and she had a lover who they called Uncle Bernie, and she would actually make, the uncles. So Uncle Bernie was one of her lovers, and very tragically and sadly and disgustingly, she would make H. Lucas watch her have sexual relations with these men, and particularly Uncle Bernie, on multiple occasions. Henry Lee Lucas basically claims that his mom tortured him his whole childhood. She shot and killed a mule that Henry was given by one of his uncles, and she actually beat him because he accepted a teddy bear as a gift from someone at school. So it's just like constant torture in his home life. When Lucas was 10 years old, he got into a fight with his brother, and it resulted in an injury to his left eye. Well, of course, Viola never brought him to the doctor.
Nope.
And within 3 days, the infection in his eye had gotten so bad that by the time she brought him to the hospital, it was so badly infected, they had to remove the eye and they replaced it with a glass eye. But so by the time he was 11, he only had one eye.
And you know that, like, the wound itself, like, after the surgery was also not taken care of.
Absolutely.
No. You know what I mean?
No, like, just absolutely not.
Just left.
Left. Who knows? And so by the time he was 11, Lucas was a full-blown alcoholic. 11 years old. Yeah. His older half-brother, as well as Uncle Bernie, also introduced him to bestiality, which, sorry, folks, is sex with animals, as well as animal torture. Not only did he get beaten by his mom badly, but then he was also taught to torture and kill animals at a young age as well. So it's like, you just have to really take into consideration, like, what this, the kind of toll this takes on a child's psyche when they are this little and being taught these horrible, horrific things.
Taught these things, seeing these things.
Every day, yeah.
Alcohol, addiction,
and he's drinking
and with that and around him, like, yeah,
right,
like his little brain can't even,
and he's drinking, yeah, and exactly, and he's drinking on top of it,
and he's drinking like grain alcohol, like he's drinking like stuff that's like
his daddy made.
Yeah,
it pisses me off.
Just obviously a really messed up childhood, obviously.
It is, and it pisses me off because, again, I mean, so many of the same, you know, parallel issues. But again, his mom already had children taken out of her home.
Yes.
Before he and his brother were even around. So, like,
yes,
how is
did.
It that they get to, she gets to keep them and then deal with this bullshit? You know what I mean? It's like, just, what are we doing?
They didn't take that shit seriously back then like that.
No.
Okay.
And I also read that he lived near a chicken coop, the people next door to the shack that they lived in, the one room cabin, owned a chicken coop. And the chickens, like, so that starts out his fascination with animals, right? And everything that he's ends up doing, unfortunately, with these horrible influences of his brother and Uncle Bernie, it's so disgusting.
Yeah.
But the chickens were also defecating all over the property with really
and
no
not
regard.
Getting cleaned up.
And that shit that shit's really toxic. It can make you sick.
So there's cadmium in chicken poop, and that can cause brain damage. So cadmium poisoning actually causes brain damage. So, like,
that's
just,
great
it's
to
just
know.
All
that's great to
the
know,
things.
Quinny.
Like,
yeah,
it's just,
and there's a couple more things too. So also his mother also started dressing him in girls' clothes, and she started bringing him out in public. And the reason for that was she was actually putting him on display so that she could later actually pimp him out to men and women, both men and women. She actually allowed them to take H. Lucas and actually do things with him, pretty much whatever they wanted, because she didn't know what they were doing once she let them take her son that was dressed in girl clothes. She was doing that to him from a very young age. And then also in December of 1949, HL's dad actually died because he drank himself so drunk that he actually died from hypothermia because he tripped and fell outside during a blizzard, fell face first in the snow, and he was knocked out and he never woke up. He died right there in the snow. By sixth grade, H.L. Lucas had dropped out of school and he had ran away from home a number of times, and he began like drifting all around parts of Virginia.
At this point, you know, this is where we always say, this is what the serial killer, or who goes on to be a serial killer, says his childhood was like, right? So take it with a grain of salt. But in this case, there are several teachers, people who are around, people who
that
live near them.
Corroborate this.
Right. That it happened.
It happened.
It happened.
Yeah. I also believe it really for the fact that sometimes, I'm not saying that it doesn't happen because it does. People make up things. We just covered a case where the girl made up a bunch of lies and bullshit. Okay. So people really do this, but it's like, you know, that girl was such a bad liar. She wasn't even able to keep her story straight or anything at all. People who are actually put through really bad, torturous things like this, these descript details and forms of abuse, it's too in depth to be made. I don't see it as made up. It's too complex to be, you know, it's like those traumas like that are just like, they're imprinted and burned into your mind. And it's like a lot of things about H.L. Lucas's story changes, but what never changes is like the story of his childhood. That's always stays the
same. That's very true. Yeah. So, okay. When you gave me the episode path and the outline, her name is Laura Bernsley. Fun fact, nobody actually knows because a lot of people say it could have also been Burnley.
This is not the last time we're going to talk about victims whose names are different depending on what newspaper different article name. You read.
Yes. Exactly. And it's like 50-50. Never anywhere. Everyone says there are no known images available of this girl. It's like she didn't even exist. And it makes me so livid. But anyway, we're in Lynchburg, Virginia. A 17-year-old girl named Laura Everlene Bernsley or Burnley.
Or Burnley, right.
This is March of 1951. The specific date, really, we don't know. But she's 17. Lucas, at this point, is 15 years old. And he would later say, now again, this is all according to him. He would later state that he actually picked up Laura in Lynchburg, abducting her from a bus stop. Again, this is where there are two roads and they always kind of veer off. The sources, we're not really sure. Some say that
it's so annoying.
It's so annoying.
It really is. Because you're just like, you want to know.
I want to know. I want to give our listeners the correct information that I just want to tell you.
We don't know. Sure, and we don't know.
This poor girl deserves to have
the justice.
Something, right?
Yeah.
Either way, Lucas takes her, right? Some sources state that at this point, she then refuses his sexual advances. And others state he literally proposed to her and she refused. Either way, it seems that he advanced on her in some aspect. I'm assuming it's sexually. Come on, let's be real. And she didn't want anything to do with him and he gets pissed. We know only all any of this because in 1983, he confessed that this is like his first real murder.
Right.
So according to his confession years later, after she refused him, he would go on to strangle Laura in the woods, kill her, bury her in the woods after raping her corpse. And this is near Harrisburg, Virginia. But then he goes on to say, well, actually, we at first were having consensual sex. And then somewhere during that time, Laura decided she didn't want it anymore. And that's when I got angry and I kept going and raped her and strangled her.
But we know, right?
And then he says Henry... he had sex with her after he killed her too, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And that seems to be a theme with him. So why would he even go through with it before she was dead? Like and it's so matter of fact too, where he's just like, well, yeah, of course. Like I had sex with the body after.
And he claims he likes to do it all different ways.
Yes.
You know,
this is where he and Ted converge a little bit with the necrophilia and the all of all this deviant after death stuff.
Mm-hmm. And like, you can't tell me you abduct a girl and she consensually wants to have sex with her abductor that just stole her from a bus stop. Anyway, we have literally no proof any of this happened. Yeah. All we have is his word, which he would later recant in full.
Right.
And Laura has never been found. And like I said, we don't even have a picture of what she looked like. We have nothing.
That's fucking crazy.
It's awful.
Did he give us her name?
He provided
the name.
Yes,
I don't know if anyone was able to officially corroborate it with a living person. And like, Bernsley and Burnley aren't completely different. It's just one missing letter, and that's easily, you know.
That's a common misunderstanding,
right? Probably. So like, that's not too crazy, but it just added like, you know,
mystery, if you will.
Like her poor, like her, she has no dignity left. Like what's
nothing. So Carly, does he do really well for himself by the time he turns 18 and
after
he turns
that,
his life
he
around?
Goes and becomes a president. He's a drifter. He's good. Good. No, he's drifting.
He's drifting it up.
Causing general mayhem wherever he goes. Numerous burglaries. He may or may not be stealing people during this time, raping, killing. We don't know.
We don't know where the hell
he was. We don't know.
But what we do know is that a few years later, on May 13th, 1954, he steals a car, a 1948 Pontiac from Waynesboro's Kaiser Motors on West Main Street in Virginia. At the time, he was living with his stepbrother, Harry Waugh. He's living with his stepbrother.
He has like 10 stepbrothers and stepsisters.
I know.
So a bunch of, odd family.
And cousins
so
and all
weird.
The things.
Yeah. Family is a weird.
It's weird.
weird.
Yo, there, it's real thing in these parts of Virginia. I'm telling you what.
He's 17 years old at this point, and he's stopped on a traffic violation in Waynesboro by an officer Stover. The car is checked, and in the car, there's money, there's a coat, there's some keys, all of which were stolen. Also, the car was stolen, like the big gun.
Yeah, so now he's burglarizing it up.
So he's Grand Theft Auto, okay, all the things. He claims that the stolen car was his stepbrother's. This is not true. The police found this out very quickly. He gets charged with breaking and entering. He gets charged with car theft. And so he goes to a hearing at the juvenile relations court. And it's at that point that it is revealed that he's also facing burglary charges in one Stanton, Virginia, and Augusta County. But everything was waived. And I could not find out why. Like, why?
I feel like this is our first little indication that, like, when Henry needs something to happen, he needs to
weasel out of something.
He can do it.
He does it. He manages to do it. Absolutely.
He's a slippery, slippery fish.
He's a slippery slope.
However, on June 28th of 1954, he was found guilty of statutory burglary due to the car, and he was sentenced to 2 years in the state penitentiary.
So yeah, here's where the prison sentences begin.
We think he's gonna go in there, he's gonna go back to school, and he's gonna do really well, and he's gonna be on the straight and narrow and get out and rehabilitate his life.
Obviously, he tries
to just literally escape prison twice.
So ridiculous.
He does technically escape the penitentiary twice, but he's like immediately caught.
Again, like just like Ted Bundy.
Okay.
Ted Bundy vibes. Yeah, totally.
But even after everything, his 2 year prison sentence, his two escapes, he still just gets released in 1959.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, we're cool with it.
Trying to escape prison doesn't add on any extra time.
No big deal.
For no reason. Nope. Don't get it. Not understanding. But he's out now.
He got out on good behavior, Carly. I mean, he did pretty good. Other than those two escape attempts.
Other than that.
You just wait, Quinnies.
He probably jumped into like a laundry bin or something and got wheeled out. Absolutely. And then like jumped out.
100.
And just nabbed him. Absolutely. You know, like it's just.
Like the Pink Panther.
They were like, good try, Henry.
Good try. Yeah. It didn't work, but good try.
He like you put failed. A hat on and like lowered it on his head and just like, oh my God.
And he also says that during this first stint in prison and the next one, which is even more interesting, he's getting familiar with how the system works. Mm-hmm. Yep. So he's talking to not only other inmates, but he's talking to COs.
Guards.
About how does this work? You know, and like, and I think he's doing that sort of Southern, like, well, you know, I don't know how he's just playing dumb and just being like, tell me about the whatever. And they're giving him information. They're talking about how things work, how the, you know, just stuff that the last thing we need to teach Henry Lee Lucas. Honestly. And they're teaching it to him. He gets out of prison and he's released from prison on September 2nd of 1959. And he hitchhikes his way from Virginia all the way to Tecumseh, Michigan to live with his sister, Opal. Throughout the time that he's in prison, Henry had been corresponding with a prison pen pal named Stella. And I can't find a last name on Stella. I can't find a picture of Stella, but one article I found described her as, quote, a repulsive woman.
No.
Oh, God.
I don't know how you could even know that. It just seems horrible. I mean, it does, like, I think maybe it's just that he's a horrible person and she was going to marry him. So it's just, I don't know.
Therefore, she's automatically a horrible person.
But that's the description I find for this lady is a repulsive woman. Like, come on, not cool. How do you even know that?
Yeah.
But I guess Stella pissed off a lot of people, which we'll come to see. Okay. So Henry, at this point, he's 23 years old. And you got to remember that when he was born, Viola was in her 40s. The men aren't coming around to do business with her as a sex worker anymore. It's not happening. She's
old.
She's got nothing now.
No. And it's not. She's losing her career. you know? And when Henry gets out, Viola's in Blacksburg and she is right around retirement age. And she thought that once Henry Lee Lucas got out of prison, he's going to come back to Blacksburg and take care of her in her golden years. Mm-hmm. I can't work anymore. You're going to come and take care of me. Henry Lee Lucas is going to do the right thing and come back and take care of his horrifically abusive mother. Great.
Cool.
That tracks. Yeah.
I have such a hard time following it, but that's apparently what people say she thought. So he's living with Opal and he tells her, I'm engaged to Stella, my prison pen pal. And Viola comes up to Tecumseh that year for Christmas. And she meets Stella for the first time. From what I understand, I found one article that says that they met in a bar. Okay. So everybody's drinking. Great combination. Yeah. Such a good idea. Hey, mom, here's this. Yeah. Here's my new fiance that you've never met. We're also intoxicated. Let's see what happens. She doesn't mince words. Okay. Viola says, not only does she not approve of this marriage, but she wants Henry to move back to Blacksburg to take care of her. And apparently she physically assaults Stella. Right there, comes for her. Henry is hugely embarrassed, right? And upset. And no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not moving back to Virginia. Forget it. He wants nothing to do with it. They're basically in a stalemate at this point. According to Henry, on January 11th of 1960, Henry and Viola again are at each other's throats about this engagement to Stella. And his unwillingness to move back to Blacksburg, you know, how dare you, you ungrateful son, you should be taking care of your mother. Henry said that it just pushed him over the edge. He just got very upset. Then she starts beating him with a broom.
Oh my God.
And it's taking him, he doesn't say this, but you have to think that it might be taking him back to a time when he could not get out of a situation like that. And he stabbed his mother in the neck. So here's the quote from Henry. All I remember was slapping her alongside the neck. But after I did that, I saw her fall and decided to grab her. But she fell to the floor. And when I picked her up, I realized she was dead. Then I noticed I had a knife in my hand and she had been cut. End quote.
Yeah, he basically says he blacked out, basically. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't remember.
We believe that.
I don't know.
It's not out of the realm of possibility.
No.
But also, he could have very well just done it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there was some, I mean, there was obviously some pent up anger there.
Right.
Yeah. Some serious.
And he's not trying to go back to prison. So who even knows what he's saying, you know? But then there are some accounts where Henry says, I loved prison. I got three meals and
electricity.
To sleep in a bed and I didn't have to see my mom do all of these sexual acts in front of me. And like, I'm not living in chicken shit.
He was literally happy to have shoes because Viola would make him walk around barefoot for no reason, like force him to be barefoot. He was like, I have three meals and shoes. Like, this is the best.
So if he's saying this, I mean, it doesn't seem like he's trying to avoid prison. I don't know. This is another one where I don't know. So Henry runs from the scene and he hitchhikes to Toledo, Ohio. And Opal eventually comes home and finds her mother dead on the floor of her house. In kind of a creepy part of the story, the death certificate says that Viola died from a heart attack
that was
precipitated by a knife injury. So it's kind of like Anderson Lucas as well. Like he fell, but the fall didn't kill him. The cold killed him. She was stabbed, but the stabbing didn't kill her. The heart attack killed her. It's just like, I don't know. It's a little weird. And then, you know, maybe if Henry hadn't run in the opposite direction and got his mother some help, maybe she would have lived. But she did, in fact, die. And a warrant was pretty much immediately issued for Henry's arrest. And he was picked up the following month in Toledo, Ohio, for the outstanding Michigan warrant. God only knows what he was doing to get picked up out there, but probably stealing shit.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And they found out that he had a warrant, goes right back to Michigan and goes right back to prison. This dude only stayed out of prison for 4 months tops. So March of 1960, right? So the following month, he's sentenced to 20 to 40 years in prison for murdering his mother.
20 to 40 years. 20 to 40 years.
Mm-hmm. So that's the end of the story. And he died in prison and it was...
Don't we wish.
And the end. Yes. Okay.
So he went to Jackson State Penitentiary. This is in Southern Michigan. And he starts doing some things that are kind of a big question mark. on one hand, you could say that he had lost his will to live. On another hand, you could say that he started figuring out exactly what he had to do to get attention so that he could better his situation, because he does go on to do that. So you just got it with Henry Lee Lucas. Always. You just got to ask why, what's the motivation behind doing that? Yeah. So there are two attempted suicides listed on his prison record. What they're doing at this time is they're giving him psychotropic drugs. They're trying to help him with his quote unquote mental health issues. He did receive shock therapy. He did receive barbiturates. They put him on like a daily regimen of like a high dosage of Benadryl too, which I was like, I can't take one Benadryl and be awake for 15 minutes. I'm done. Yeah. So I'm just like, I don't know what the point of that was, but the thing is he does these things and he's doing them so often, he's self-harming, at least on the record, and they move him to Ionia State Mental Hospital. So he kind of achieves his objective a little bit, because now he's not in prison, he's in a hospital. And while he's in the hospital, he spends a bunch of time in their library. And in the hospital library, he starts digesting a lot of legal material. Literally during his time in the hospital, he's taught how to read formally, like actually read at a what we would call an adult level. And he starts digesting case law. And again, the last thing
we need to teach Henry Lee Lucas.
So he starts seeing this, and he starts seeing quite specifically, and he goes on to talk about this later, that police departments don't communicate with each other. So he said he's starting to realize that if you commit a crime in one state and then you just leave the state, you don't really have to worry about it. Yeah, because the police don't talk to each other. You're not going to get caught, whatever. So he was paroled in 1970 after serving 10 years of, a 20 to 40 year sentence.
Yeah.
Apparently, he says that he begged them not to let him out. That he said, if you let me out, I'm going to kill people.
You'll have a dead body on your doorstep by tomorrow. I mean, you're just going to say that to the warden and they're going to be like, okay, bye.
But they got him out because of overcrowding. That's what they cite, is that there were too many prisoners. Mm-hmm. He served his time.
But like,
and so
he's the one you're going to get out.
No, it would have been super beneficial if he served the minimum of his sentence. If he just wasn't out here in the world in the 70s, that would have been really.
Would have been okay. Would have been great. Cool. But I will say it's almost like, because didn't he have a really low IQ due to like the brain damage from the coma and the drinking and whatever?
Some places say that he did, and others say that he was average.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like normal range.
Yeah. But for whatever I heard was like, oh, well, he had like an IQ of 87.
That's what some people say that. But I also wonder if Henry said that or if he somehow he finds himself in all these little places and he gets information from people.
Like
that
he's definitely smart enough to like be so manipulative and
weaselly. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird.
1970, Henry Lee Lucas is back on the streets. Carly, what does he do? Or Katie, what does he do?
Yeah. So he doesn't last very long on the streets, please. Because by 1971, Lucas was convicted of attempting to kidnap 3 schoolgirls.
From a bus stop, right?
From a bus stop. Yes.
See, no matter what we think at the end of this with anything, his confessions or anything, this is a sexual predator. Absolutely. Period. The end.
Straight up.
We can't take that away from him. We know he did this.
100%. Sure enough, he goes to the bus stop. He tries to charm these little girls. Someone sees him. Obviously, and the cops are called and he gets arrested for this. I think he got, I couldn't find really in-depth details, but one source I read actually said that he really actually almost got one of these girls. Like he actually got her. She almost got into the car.
Yeah.
Like,
he said something about her family. He knew something about her family, or they asked me to pick you up or something. And she almost got there. Yeah.
And then I don't know exactly like how it was stopped, but it's because someone saw it and the cops were called, and so all of a sudden cops roll up basically. thank goodness they literally happen to get there in the perfect time before he's actually able to snatch one of these little things up. So yeah, this also right away shows you too that after everything we've already heard of the sick shit that he's been exposed to and that he's doing, now we also know that he's a pedophile as well. Sexual attraction towards little girls. Because some sources said he got sentenced to 5 years. Then I read another place that it was only 3.5. But the way I see it is he probably got a 5-year sentence for this kidnapping, and he ended up serving 3.5 years of this sentence, is what I took from it. And after 3.5 years of a sentence, he literally gets released.
Stop. Letting him out. It's like whiplash. Like, what
and
are
we doing?
And it kills
me too. Like, they're going down a list and they're like, okay, this person's going to be released. And then, okay, oh, we get to H.L. Lucas. Oh, okay, he killed his mom and then he tried to abduct 3 schoolgirls from this bus stop. Okay, yep, this guy can be released. Yeah, that's no problem. It's no mind-boggling to me.
And what does he do next, Quinnies? Does he meet?
He finds love, Quinnies.
Yes. Oh, so now he goes. Now he goes to Pennsylvania, right? When after this,
Maryland.
No, Maryland.
Maryland. Yes. And you know how do these? You know, we all have that one friend that's been looking for love for like a long time, and they're great, and you're just like, it's gonna happen for them. How did these guys get the ladies? I don't get it.
No.
It's good to note here too, like what we said earlier too. He would get out of prison. And then he would go to another state.
Yep.
He leaves.
Yep.
He goes away because, you know, he got in trouble in this place. So he can't be there anymore, right? Because he has to continue to get in trouble.
Charlie, take us into the soap opera world. This part's rough. It is rough.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I mean, I don't have a lot because there's really not a lot about her.
About Betty. No.
It's just.
She spoke to a couple, like she spoke to some people after the fact, but I think she doesn't want anything to do.
Nothing to do with it.
With this, yeah.
But at the time, it was all happening.
She was about it. Quitty.
Betty Crawford, she was a single mom to 3 children, and she was actually a widow of one of Lucas's cousins. Again, one of his cousin's widows. She's a single mom with 3 kids. They just straight up get married in 1975. I couldn't find like how did that courtship begin? Like, what are we doing here? Don't know. They just straight up got married. And did we think it was like a loving wedding night? No, it wasn't, because that very night of the wedding, Lucas would immediately start sexually assaulting her daughters, his stepdaughters now, all 3 young girls. This would continue for the next 2 years as they all lived together until the daughters just couldn't take it anymore. And they finally told their mom, Betty.
Yep.
Okay, so like, good for them. And at first, when Betty asked Lucas about it, he denied all the accusations. But he denied it and then immediately goes, okay, but you know what? I'm going to peace out. And he just leaves the family.
Yes, yep.
Which is good. They don't need him.
And he gave all this bullshit about, oh, well, you're going to ruin their lives. You're going to ruin your kids' lives by saying that this happened to them. Like, really
manipulative,
horrible shit. Yeah.
But he leaves the family. And he and Betty separate. And essentially, like, they don't see each other again. Thank God.
Nope.
Later, Betty would say in an interview about her estranged husband. She was like, he didn't have the time to kill people all across the country when he lived with me. She goes, quote, they can execute and get rid of him. I haven't seen him for 8 years and I don't want to see him again. So she's like, he can go out with the trash. That's fine with me. And, you know, good for her, because considering like what we know about him so far as a person, how he is in relationships with women and children.
She got away.
She did get away. Like, she could have easily cowered and not done anything to advocate for her children. So,
and
like,
then been
her.
One of his victims. Exactly. Yeah. Definitely. Or her daughters could have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They all could have been. So like, good for
sure.
You know, so Henry can't be in Maryland anymore. Okay. There's another state. Checked off the list. Mm-hmm. Can't go back there because everybody knows what he's been up to. He decides, as many a drifter does, like Eileen did, like
it gives me Eileen vibes too.
Yeah,
he decides to go to the one place where we know our favorite drifters are, Quinny's. He's gonna go to a family reunion. I don't know. The family reunion. I can't. He jumps in the car with his cousin Wade. I have no idea how this happens or how they end up together, but from Wade's telling of it, he's in the car with Wade. He gets talking to the guy in the car next to them because they're in stop standstill traffic. Henry says, "Where are you going?" And the guy says, "I'm going to Shreveport." And he says, "I'm going with you." And he gets out of his cousin's car and gets in the car with the guy going to Shreveport and ends up in Florida.
In fucking Florida. What? Random as hell.
Can you imagine if that's how it still was, that you could even do something like that?
Like just get in a car with a stranger and go somewhere?
Absolutely. Well, you do. Yeah. It's Uber.
But again, Uber like how charming do you have to be to just strike up a conversation? And the guy's just like, sure.
You can come with me. Yeah.
It's crazy. He's not like flashing cash around. Like he's not, you know,
he doesn't have anything to offer you. He doesn't have gas money. He doesn't, you know, so Quinny's going to get into.
So he goes to Florida.
Florida.
So he ends up in Florida. And while he's in Florida, he gets like some odd end jobs, you know, here and there. He's like basically doing whatever he can to survive. In 1976, he actually is like has it going through a phase of struggle and he doesn't have anything. And he actually ends up at a soup kitchen. At the soup kitchen is where he meets Otis Toole.
Not my favorite part of this story.
We don't like this. We really don't. And he meets Otis. According to Henry Lee Lucas, he says they hit it off immediately and that they were immediately, instantly friends and that they had a connection. And actually, they both say this. They both do say that they had a friendship. Multiple sources say that they had a homosexual relationship. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that they actually like had feelings for each other. But so either way, the two of them, like I said, strike up this immediate friendship. Lucas actually ends up moving in with Otis Toole and his family. So now Lucas is living with Otis Toole, Otis's parents, as well as another little girl who's actually Otis's niece. She's living there too. But so they all move in together, right? Well, while we're on the subject of Otis Toole's family, we might as well just go ahead and jump right in to how Otis was brought up and what Otis saw as a child. I'm going to say it was a great
white picket fence, traditional.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, family. Real honky-dory. Absolutely.
Yep. He was in the Boy Scouts.
All American Sunday.
Very house on the prairie.
Let me tell you what. So we're going to jump right in here. This is, I'll go ahead and give everybody another warning. This is going to get a little gruesome. Otis Elwood Toole. In my notes, I wrote Otis Elwood Toolbag. Born on March 5th of 1947. He's a Pisces in Jacksonville, Florida. He lived his whole life in Jacksonville. His father was an alcoholic who actually abandoned him and his mother at a very young age. And does this sound familiar, Quinny's? His mother was abusive and a drunk, and she dressed him in girls' clothes and called him Susan.
What is
Quinny's?
This? Why?
It's not cool.
What is this? As a young child, he was sexually abused by multiple close relatives, family members, and acquaintances, including his own older sister and also as well as a next door neighbor.
There's some contention too that his dad would pass him around to his buddies, kind of like Henry getting passed around.
Yeah. So Toolbag claims that his maternal grandmother was actually a Satanist who exposed him to many satanic practices and rituals as a child, including grave robbing. Toolbag also claims that all of this abuse had happened after he had told his family that he was gay. So that a lot of this abuse came after he said that he was gay. That's a little confusing to me, though. Like, did he already tell his family that he was gay, or did his family not know? And then he just came out to all the rest of his family, but not his parents. I don't know. That seems a little weird to me, but either way, Tool was classified as having mental retardation with an IQ, your intellectual quotient, of 75. And he also had suffered from epilepsy, which caused him to have frequent grand mal or grand mal seizures.
Yeah, grand mal.
Okay, but Quinn, the reason why he has the seizures.
Oh my God. Did you see that, Quinny?
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
On the Netflix thing? Or
he fell through a broken floorboard in the porch when I think he was like five. Like
he was really young.
Six. Yeah.
Yes. And he landed with a nail 3 inches into the frontal lobe of his brain.
Okay.
Jesus.
Okay. Yeah. So
the kid had some head damage. So did Henry Lee Lucas as well. They both have serious head damage. Otis Toole also, like Lucas, ran away from home numerous times as a kid, and he would even sleep in abandoned homes. He was also a serial arsonist from a very young age, and he was sexually aroused by fire. Otis Toole also states that he was forced to have sex with a friend of his dad's at the age of 5 years old, just like you were saying, Quinny, and he says that he felt he knew that he was gay by age 10 and that he had had a sexual relationship with a boy from the neighborhood at the age of 12 years old. Toole had dropped out of school by the time he was in 9th grade and he began visiting gay bars. He also claimed that he had been a male prostitute as a teenager and that at one point he even became obsessed with gay pornography. Toole states that he committed his first murder when he was age 14 after being propositioned for sex by a traveling salesman. Toole ran over the salesman with his own car. Okay.
It's all the levels.
It's crazy.
It is.
And then Toole was arrested for the first time at age 17 in August of 1965 for loitering. Basically, he survived just by prostituting and panhandling. And, you know, he starts drifting too also, but mostly just around Florida. And then we circle back around to where he ends up in the soup kitchen as well. And him and Henry Lee Lucas actually meet. And now they're living together, you know. And then does Henry Lee Lucas straighten up his life then, Quinnies? Get his shit together, Quinnies?
And I certainly make
shit right, Quinnies?
He doesn't, because Otis. Okay, so Otis's fam is around. I think his mother may have died at least during this period or right before.
That Lucas did live there while she was alive.
She was still alive.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
So she must have died at some point during their travels.
I'll get into it slightly.
Yes, he's living there. A lot of the family's living there. Otis is actually married at the time that he brings good old Henry Lee Lucas home.
What was that, Quinny? Hold on. Wait.
Oh, he's married, buddy.
Okay.
He found love too. He's married to a woman named Novella. He says was totally aware that he was gay. Absolutely 100% aware, but it was societally acceptable for the both of them to be married. So she knew that that he preferred men, and he would sometimes, there's some contention that he would sometimes, like he was, Otis talks about being gay later when he's interviewed by police, but there is some contention that he was more bisexual. And the same thing for Henry too. Yeah. Like there's some question there about that. It's not really labeled that way, but there's some question about it. Novella left when Otis brought Henry home and just went to live with the neighbor because she was like, okay, well, I guess this is what's going on. So there's a few.
That's so random to me though, that she goes to live with the neighbor.
Well, because it was not a secret. She knew that he was into men and she was just like, all right.
Okay. Later.
Yeah. And also it was easy enough for Otis when he was a little kid to get pushed around by his family, but he ended up 6'5" imposing. I mean, he was a huge
big
dude.
Guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he's taken up a fair amount of space himself. There's not enough room for all these people that are being brought into this house. Two of the others that are living in Otis's house are Frank Powell, who is Otis's nephew, and Frieda Lorraine Powell, aka Becky, who Carly will get into a little bit later. Otis and Henry share their passion for drifting. Okay. They like going out there, being on the open road, seeing shit, and quite frankly, causing chaos and mayhem wherever they go.
I was just going to say, and also killing people.
And also killing people. Too.
And raping and arsoning and bestiality.
And like probably just, and just probably doing really, really super sick shit together.
And so what a great idea to invite the kids to join you on these drifting trips. So now we got Henry, Otis, Frank, and Becky joining in some of these escapades, which I'm sure Carly will get into. So it's just, it's a family affair.
And she starts at an early, it's at an early age, Becky too, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They're both, both her and Frank are young.
Still a kid. Yeah.
So Otis, despite all of this, despite the fact that there were four of them on several of the trips, Otis claims that he personally accompanied Henry on over 100 murders in their time. So remember, right? Henry himself confesses to literally hundreds, but here are just a few of them that he may have done in Florida that resulted in his eventual trial and conviction. So in 1980, December 15th of 1980, Henry Lee Lucas murdered John P. McDaniel Jr. of Jackson County, Florida. He was working as a gas station clerk at the time, but he was formerly the mayor of Malone, Florida. So it's kind of unclear if he was like owner operator of a gas station when he got older, but he was like a known entity. Lucas and Toole said that this murder was commissioned in the course of a robbery, which is an aggravated felony in Florida, right? So you're going to get a life sentence. It's just how it is. The victim's son, John McDaniel III, was 15 days away from being sworn in as the sheriff of Jackson County when his dad was shot in Campbellton, Florida, while working at the gas station. Henry and Otis eventually confessed to this murder. They said that they did it together. It's Otis who has the sexual thrill from robbing and murdering men specifically, as evidenced by Katie telling us that he ran over a salesman with his own car and is sexually aroused by fire and chaos, basically.
Yeah. Yep.
But then they also say that Henry was involved here and Henry ended up convicted of it. So who knows? Sad, kind of weird footnote to the story. John McDaniel III, who lost his dad to Otis Toole and Henry Lee Lucas, his wife was also murdered when he was the sheriff. So both his dad and his wife had been murdered. His wife called him at work while he was the sheriff and said there was a strange car in their driveway. He drove home with backup. They surprised two intruders who eventually got away and have never been identified, but they killed his wife, Melly McDaniel, and one of the deputies.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That is like terrible.
Tragic life that this man has led. It's so sad. Quinny's, the information just gets thinner and thinner. So I don't have a lot on these murder victims, and I'm going to go from the most information, which is John P. McDaniel, and then the least information. So the next February 10th of 1981, we have Geraldine Murphy Peoples. She was murdered in her Holmes County residence. She was reportedly severely beaten in her home and died later at Bonifay Hospital. But I also found a source that said she was shot. So I don't know if there was both. I don't know. She was 18 years old, but she left behind a husband, Brower, who is still alive today. And though there's controversy, obviously, over these confessions, Geraldine's father, Harold Murphy, remains convinced that his daughter was murdered by Henry Lee Lucas. He's not one of the families that we will discuss that do not believe Henry Lee Lucas committed any murders. And then we have March 25th of 1981, Brenda Jo Burton in Holmes County. She was found dead in her home with strangulation and stab wounds. Henry Lee Lucas confessed to that. I don't know anything else about the woman.
And yeah, then, it's limited. It's really limited in this little section. Yeah.
April 9th, 1981. Finally, Mary Ruby McCrary. She was from Washington County. She was shot to death in her home. And that's all I know about her.
It gives me vibes that like they go to a woman's house, probably do whatever they want with the woman. And then they kill them, probably have sex with them afterwards, and then take whatever they want out of the house.
Yep.
So that
Carly,
they
do
can
you get
survive.
Into that at all with Becky?
Not really.
Okay. So I think what they end up
saying, I know we're going to talk about Becky more next episode.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Like I didn't really go into too much in this one.
But
then, like,
what
Kate
they end up eventually. Yeah. Oh my God. Kate, who knew immediately. Don't like you. Don't like you. Never going to like you. Don't trust you. get the hell out of here. Knew he was no good. They do eventually go on to say that basically, I mean, they say a lot of shit always. So yeah, I don't even know if this is true, but they go on to say that what they would do is they had the kids with them. So they would say they would have one of the kids go knock on the door and ask for water to top off the radiator or ask for anything for the car. They have a flat tire and they need help. Yep. Mm-hmm. And that would get the person either out of the house or to open the door. And that would give them their point of entry.
It makes
sense. So they're like, and it's just
going to work every time.
Yes, because you see a child.
It's going to work every time.
So Carly, what do we know about Becky Powell? Introduce us to poor little Becky Powell.
First of all, I don't even want to call her Becky. Okay.
I know.
We know that Lucas is living with Tool, Otis, Otis's wife briefly, Otis's mother, Sarah, and her husband, and then Frank and Becky. Lucas would completely immerse himself in this family in one way or another. And while doing that, he would become especially close to Otis's 11-year-old niece, Frida, or Becky Powell. She was being raised by Sarah, her grandmother at the time, but that really wasn't any better. Like, she still had a very rough childhood. She did have a mild cognitive or intellectual disability, and she was often neglected by Sarah, along with her brother, was neglected.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is being neglected, abused, head injury, like all the things.
Yep,
but the reason I don't really love calling her Becky is because Lucas himself gave her that.
Called her that. Yeah. Right.
For no reason. Out of the blue. He was like, oh, hey, Frida, you know what? I'm going to call you Becky. Okay? And the only reason that I can gather, and this is just me, just my opinion, there's no proof anywhere, is it because it sounds like Betty?
It does a little.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because later
it's the first thing, right? It's the first little thing that makes him and her have a little joke between them.
Exactly. Right. It's like his way of controlling her is what it is.
You know?
It's so weird.
Either way, unfortunately, Becky at this point is, you know, she's 11. She's not understanding what he's really doing. And she's looking to him like a father figure in her life because she doesn't have one. That doesn't really last very long. Essentially, Lucas immediately starts grooming her and then would begin sexually assaulting her regularly. No one in that family, everyone in that family knew what was going on.
Yep.
And did no nothing. One in that family did anything nothing. About it.
Nope, they let it happen.
Absolutely nobody did anything. So like we've already talked about a little bit, during this time, Otis and Lucas are just going around, traveling, killing.
Yeah, drifting.
Bringing Becky and her brother along to witness the killings. Otis is like masturbating to the killings over here. Lucas is over here having sex with a corpse over there. Kids are watching them allegedly dismember bodies, bury them in the woods. There was possible talk of cannibalization at some point.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. He says a lot. Henry Lee Lucas claims that Otis would do killings in the satanic ritualistic manner and says that he would like to barbecue the people and eat them afterwards. But Henry Lee Lucas didn't do that because he didn't like barbecue sauce.
Yeah, he said he didn't like the taste.
So if he did, he would have been all for it. Either way, according to them, the kids are around.
Yes.
They're witnessing this. However, like, we're not really sure because we don't really know anything at all. And also, like, on one particular instance where Lucas states that the kids were definitely with them for one particular murder, the school records show that both Becky and her brother were in school that whole day. So, like, did Lucas get the date wrong? Did he lie completely? Is he misremembering? Could it have been any other murder and not that one? We don't know.
Because Frank goes on to do some sworn affidavits for the police. And then Frank pieces out. And Frank Powell just like, we don't even know. He just goes off and lives his life.
Hopefully living a much better life.
Hopefully. Yeah, hopefully he's all right. But like,
we don't know.
He swore that he saw at least the Florida murders that he ends up being charged with. Frank attests, yes, I was there.
I wouldn't necessarily say like, were they there for every single one? Maybe not. They definitely saw some shit that they did not have any business having to see and are totally traumatized from. But during this, Becky's grandmother, who has custody of her, Sarah, she dies. He and Frank are both sent to live with their mother, Drusilla. And that's not great either, because Drusilla struggled with addiction, and she also had a history of abuse and neglect with the children, which is the reason they weren't living with her in the first place.
Right, they weren't
first
even place. There. Right.
It's like, these are the days of people still having their doors unlocked, and still having their backyard fences and thinking that no one's going to climb over them. It's and like, you know, very what? Much that lifestyle. Like,
it's all, that's very true. And also, though, we don't even necessarily know if it was official that the reason Frank and Becky were living with Sarah was because they were officially taken from Drusilla's home.
Right.
It
no,
could have been it could have just that Drusilla been. Dropped him off one day and never came back.
And just said
whatever.
Bye.
You know what I mean? Like
100.
We don't really know.
Exactly.
However, while Becky and Frank are back living with their mother and being neglected and abused and dealing with an addict for her mom, Lucas and Otis are still regularly hanging out with Becky, getting her from the house, going on
their
adventures. Okay. And Lucas is still sexually abusing her while manipulating and controlling her more and more as the days go on. Later, he would say that Becky was the only girl he ever loved. And like, that was just the beginning of their relationship. Like, that was the beginning of their courtship.
She was 11.
I know.
At this point, she might be 12.
Sure.
Jesus Christ.
Come on. Well, that's where we're going to end it for now.
It's a good place to stop.
And we are going to be coming back next week with the 80s, what the 80s were like for Henry Lee Lucas. He's going to get arrested, I promise you, and they're going to keep him this time.
He'll stay in there. We promise.
Spoiler alert, there are more murders.
There's a lot more murders. We're going to get into the confessions. We're going to get into...
There's a house of prayer involved.
The circus.
There's a cult involved.
There's a cult.
It's a lot.
Henry goes back to living in a chicken coop. It's all in there.
Everywhere.
Meanwhile, Otis Tool is jacking off somewhere
jacking
to a fire.
Fire.
Oh, he scares the living shit out of me, Quince.
Absolutely.
Listen to Straight Up Evil.